I'm Joanne Holt. Our subject for this morning is Women to the Back of the Bus or the Driver's Seat. Our references are listed to my right for the listening audience. One of them is a magazine called The Other Side, August 1982, and it's for Christians who believe in justice within a discipleship. The article particularly is for the love of money and the ERA, how did we let it go down the drain? And I'll put this in the library this afternoon if any of you want to read it sometime. The other one is from the Lutheran, and it is the October 7th, 1981, and the article here is the church is 99.9% male dominated. The other one is I. Francis, and it's the chapter on Claire. Claire is still an alive Roman Catholic group of women, the same as the St. Francis group, and it's really under that order. And last week we had a St. Francis Day, and so we discussed inclusiveness as one of the subjects, and some of my material comes from that today. The tapes, there are two tapes by Mary Schramm called Women in the Life of Paul and Women in the Life of Jesus, as two sacred ones to listen to, and they are in the tape library right now. The third one is a secular one, and it's called Women in the Life of Reagan, and that I have done. It should have probably been called Women in the World of Reagan, so you wouldn't think I was giving a touch of gossip, although there was that there too. But if you are interested in what's really happening on the Washington, D.C. scene today in relation to the Reagan administration and women, handicaps, and blacks primarily, and low-income families, that's really what that tape is about. What I'm hoping to do today is to deal with some of the past for perhaps a new kind of understanding of why we are where we are in relation to women, which will give us some knowledges, and then the present happenings, particularly in what happened to the ERA and what is happening in the Reagan administration in terms of whether the women are to be in the back of the bus, normal passengers anywhere they wish to be, or in the driver's seat, will be sort of the three kinds of areas that we deal with. The awareness then is what's happening in the present, and the action, I hope, is what you go home and do about it all in relation to yourself, your community, your church, and I think the entire nation in terms of the equality for women and for men within society. I am, in fact, a feminist, but all this means is that I advocate and demand for women the same rights that are granted men, as in political or economic status. And further, I believe that more than ever, Christian men and women must press for a cultural transformation. And finally, that as individuals, we do have the power individually and collectively to make changes within our society and to be change agents. I did not think that in years past, but more and more as I work in the Washington, D.C. scene, and I live within 15 miles of downtown Washington, I believe that we can make changes and that we do make a difference. We make a difference in legislative action. We then further make a difference in whether the legislative action is or is not enforced. And further, that the selection of the individuals who will run our society, we have freedom to help decide. If you don't believe it, look at the backing of Phyllis Schlafly, a single individual in terms of influence. Now, her financial backing was far above any backing of any ERA group. Her backing came from the anti-labor movement groups, Kool's Beer, for example, the manufacturing of clothes industry, all self-vested interest in why the ERA should not pass, as an example. And so were we to collectively work together on the voting scene, on the local, in your local governments and in your state legislators or legislations, who certainly do have an influence. The gathering of the anti-nuclear war in New York is an illustration of the possibility of what individuals collectively can do. And so it's the awareness and the probably essential belief that a change is needed that has to happen. But that's why I'm interested in discussing it today, because I think that you do make a difference and that you can be the voice. And particularly for Christians, it's really not the law anyway that should determine our actions as much as our own personal understanding of the essential power and importance of the individual human being in the humanistic sense. And so we're starting on our 63rd year today of the struggle for equality for girls and women. And so it seemed like an appropriate time to look at what has been, why it happened, the pros and cons of what happened, and then whether women ought to be in life's bus in the back, whether they should be in the driver's seat, or indeed if they should be in either place without any kind of discrimination on whether they are in the driver's or in the back seat. Many men argue that she should always be in the back of the bus in public, and that she is in fact in the driver's seat at home. And I'm not so sure that's not the truth, but that she should be the power behind the throne as opposed to up front. Many women in the women's movement would argue that the women ought to be in the driver's seat for the next 20 years and see how they could run the country, businesses, management, and with their sensitivity to life, that they would change the model of government in our society. Many others would argue, however, that the best driver ought to be the driver and that the rest be the passengers in any portion of the bus. The difficulty with that, and that's probably where I stand, is that either ought to be in the driver's seat and alternating depending on one's talents where one really is. The difficulty with that, however, is who has been trained to be the bus driver? The male. Consequently, at this very moment, there are far more great male bus drivers than females. And it has nothing to do with an innate ability. God did not ordain that men will be better bus drivers than women. And in fact, in our reaction time, women who are trained tend to have better reaction time or movement time, which would be significant at least if you're driving a bus in Washington, D.C., that occurs. Women who are bus drivers do not have any more accidents than those who do. The problem is the apprenticeship and the difficulty that we are behind in bus driving or in leadership roles, as the case may be. And that therefore, to merely say that women can drive buses will not take care of the action. And that's one of the reasons, for example, for the ERA. Reagan has promised that there is to be equality for women and that all of the present laws will take care of that. We have evidence already, and I'll talk about that later, but that is not the case in the big city. And so that there are laws besides actions that are essential, and that affirmative action is essential. I certainly am not in favor of the kind of busing that we have done, but I am also not in favor of returning to the non-integrated society that we have had in the past, and that that's one of the actions, for example, of the present group. So what has put us in this position so that the man is in the driver's seat, particularly in 20th century America? Certainly if we look at colonial America, the women are working side by side with the men. And as they moved west, they continued to work side by side in the farming, really in the decision-making of the family, and almost in all areas. The heavy work, perhaps more often done by males, and rightly so, if you check the physiological differences, that ought to happen. The difficulty has been that that, therefore, has been the determining factor for the breadwinner after the colonial period in which the women and the men really worked together. It's one of the reasons that it is in the West that the vote came early for women, because they were still working side by side. The story is told of Daniel Boone. Any of you ever hear of what Daniel Boone's wife did? It says in all of my books that she was a helpmate. The fact is, she hunted with him when he was in prison. She raised his children. She went out and got the food. She did the shooting. She did a shooting of an Indian, and he may never have, as we get beyond the legend. But as the history books moved in, Daniel Boone's wife fades into the background. And yet she was, in fact, not a helpmate, but a companion and a partner in their westward movement. And in some of an Indian's diary writing, it would suggest that she was really the strength when he became quite handicapped with rheumatism. And after being in a cold prison, and she then did all of the hunting and all of the fishing and the preparation of the food for the meals, except the meat, and Daniel Boone did that himself. But it gives you a picture of how our society has perceived the roles. The second step that has caused us so much difficulty is, of course, the Victorian era. The Victorian era arrives not just because of Queen Victoria, but in our society because of the struggle for middle class and upper class status. How in our society might we show that we have moved, particularly the male, from the lower class to the middle class or even to the upper class? What would be some of the ways of showing status that we may, in fact, use almost to the present?
Your wife doesn't have to work.
Your wife doesn't have to work. Obviously, if you can be the breadwinner, male, then there must be an ability there. Remember, she has worked side by side for centuries. You move into the marketplace, away from the home, that leaves only the mother at home. And then if you can put the mother on a pedestal so she doesn't even have to take care of the children very much, and she can look pale and weak, then you can also afford servants. Consequently, the term ladies of leisure. And those ladies of leisure were exactly that. They could go out and walk, play archery, croquet, wonderful game, croquet, and swim, sorta. Gentle exercises, be careful of the sun, you must remain pale and fragile. This demonstrates the maleness of our society, the individualistic male. And it becomes even more important when he puts the white collar on. Because how have we shown in the past that we are men of great strength? By doing. And suddenly, you don't have to do. The male doesn't have to do. We've got factories. We've got industrialization that does all the doing. So then you've got to find another place for the doing. And that's when we'll move into the concept of the rite of passage, where the male can get his maleness through other sources. Work is still number one, but sport can help it, particularly if you're a white-collar worker, because you can show it. War shows it best of all. If you really want to prove manliness, we go to war. And we've done that periodically, without really much concentration on whether we ought or we ought not, until the Second World War. And Roosevelt was concerned about whether we ought or we ought not. But otherwise, we haven't been much concerned. We just sort of moved into the war. And that makes a man. Football, of course, can make it if we don't have the concept of war. Or the closing of the frontier. You could also move west, because that showed you were a man. But with the closing of the frontier, we needed something new. And that something new was either a lot of children, and that became too expensive, sport, or be a breadwinner and your wife not work. Because if your wife has to work, then there's some kind of supplementary problem to that all the way through that whole Victorian era. The next problem is the religious one. The religious tenets say submissiveness on the part of the wife, obedience on the part of the wife, and further, that the wife is responsible for the moral fiber of the family. Now, what does that do for the male? If he's not responsible for the moral fiber of, off the hook, double standard. And that was one of the big movements in 1870 in New York City. The prostitutions moved into New York City in the urbanization, and it was perfectly all right because the religious tenet says mother is responsible for the moral fiber of the family. And so really, mother fails if father goes off to the prostitutes. And so you're caught in more than a catch-22 in the religious tenet. But the most difficult about the religious, which survives today, is that woman must be obedient to the men. And that's been the most difficulty and hang-up for our own Lutheran women. Who is head of the household? It is not a concept of companions working things out, but rather breadwinner, supplementary, if we must. And now it's all right to have a supplementary income at least. The problem, of course, is that breadwinner concept is still central issue to the whole thing. So the religious tenet is a difficulty. But probably the most difficult comes when the male does not have to prove himself through activity or through his job because he is a white-collar worker. And that's where the rite of passage of fathering kids, war, sport, and must be a breadwinner comes out. And where, for example, Theodore Roosevelt, you women who hate football can thank for the football movement. Why in the world would Theodore Roosevelt want football? Nice rough rider. Why would he want football as you think about it? What can it be a substitute for? We've already said, war and prove manliness. Actually, what Theodore Roosevelt says is my wife is bugging me. And she's really running the household. And here we are off at the Ivy Leagues in our shirt and collars, and they're calling us a bunch of eggheads in our scholarly endeavor. Well, how can we keep from being called sissies? The women are taking over the male role in that they're making decisions, and he's very upset with his wife. And so the Ivy League say, let's cut football. 19 deaths in 1904 from football. And so many of the institutions said, let's cut it. Theodore Roosevelt says, hey, my team's been winning. Harvard wins, Yale wins. And I want to see football. Besides, that's what makes men out of our boys in college. So he calls a meeting in 1905 and says, we got to have football, boys. But what we have to do is change football so we're not killing off our young men. And so the forward pass, gentlemen, came into being. And that saved football, and that saved the rite of passage, and that kept women out of sport for the rest of the 20th century. And then you can add wrestling and boxing and ice hockey now. And it also has the substitute of violence. But the real major issue that comes out of this rite of passage is the breadwinner concept. And the last one that caused trouble is social Darwinism. Now that's just a big term for survival of the white fittest. And that's where the blacks have had the most difficulty. Because after the Civil War, where they began to move into society and, for example, participate in sport, which it may also happen in other areas, but sport was most important because of this Darwinism theory, which is the survival of the fittest and the importance of the physical. And so the blacks began to box whites and to beat them. And they began to play baseball and to be better than the whites, which was a gentleman's sport. And so the social Darwinism theory helped to separate that out by the Jim Crow laws. And so the blacks, and of course the inferior women, who they didn't worry about until they started being in pedestrian races. There were women who could run 50 miles. And we're, of course, learning that that's true, that women's endurance is probably greater than men. But in 1870s, they were running 50 miles, 100 miles. They were in bike races in the 80s and 90s. They were jockeys. And suddenly, they stopped all that, and the Victorian concept took over. And so all of those have worked together in our society. Yet our society has been trying to do as much as it can to prevent that. There is a new present awareness. And what are some of the things that have happened that have led to a concept of an attempt for equality, or even some happenings that have just happened to lead towards more equality for the woman, where they think of something besides the back of the bus for her. What? World War II is the primary issue as we look historically. The women went to the factories. If any of you ever get a chance to see Rosie the Riveter, it is just a great, anybody see it? It is just a great movie on what happened. Once she went to the factories this time, it was unlike the First World War. She went begrudgingly at the First World War time to the factories. And the factories weren't quite as important. Torpedo factory in Washington, D.C., for example, had 85% women working in it during the Second World War. Then the war is over. The women went home as it was their duty. But the women were not satisfied, really, to go home. They found that there was something wrong with the survival of the fittest concept. There was something wrong with the rite of passage. They could, in fact, do all kinds of things. They could balance the books. They could raise their kids. They could work in the factory. They weren't sick every month, two or three days, because they were getting plenty of activity, and that was one of the primary problems. If you put a corset on, you're going to have problems too, and barely walk around. It's no wonder you faint. And so they found that it was not by nature that women were weak for even 2 to 3 days. Finally, physical education discovered that, by the way, in the 60s, and decided that you could play basketball, you could win gold medals in the Olympics. Over half of the swimmers in the 72 Olympics were in the middle of their period. Tidy bit of information. Now, of course, they control it, both because they're so vigorous that they often don't have their periods, just as the female horses. They, too, had difficulty. They were afraid that she wasn't going to be able to mate, but after she quit having vigorous activity. Unfortunately, there are some women using that, or girls even trying to use that as birth control, being vigorous in physical activity. It won't work. And we have some not performers of the day that have learned it does not work. But you can see the beginning of a whole change by that Second World War. And it is those women then that began to raise me and my age. And those women had had a taste, even if they're back home, they had had a taste of a different life away from the home and that they were good at. And they were not as willing to stay home. They stayed home, but not as willingly as they had. And they also weren't needed at home as we begin to go to school at 4.5, at 3.5. And as the families became smaller, and it was easy to juggle the schedules. And so the Second World War certainly made probably the primary change, much more than the right to vote. That really had very little effect, by the way, except a psychological one in the 20s. So the war has got to be won. Since the war, what else has happened?
How about the riddle being the breadwinner and Mooney staying home and taking care of the ranch?
The what?
How about Loretta Lynn being the breadwinner and Mooney staying home and taking care of the ranch?
Right, the role model concept that begins to appear. And the realization after the Second World War, also a result of it, what did all the men do when they came home, or 20% of them? They trotted off to college, and they married immediately because they'd had it with 4 years of male companionship. And the woman trotted off to college with him and got a job, supported him through his education, and then he was ready to roll. And again, she had been out in the world. And then that led to divorce. And divorce is a major cause of the change that has occurred in our society, because the female has realized, in part, that she's a human being and that this second-class citizenry really doesn't fit her, that she has a mind, she has talent, she has ability, different in a lot of cases than the male, interestingly different, and a lot of it nurtured. But some of it not, perhaps. We don't know yet. But at least she brings with it a sensitivity that the male hasn't brought in the past, a nurturing ability, an assertiveness as opposed to an aggressiveness, a willingness to compromise, all kinds of things that she brings to the marketplace that hadn't been there before. Now, whether it will continue to be there depends on you and me and how we're raising our children, if we really are doing them in a cross-sexed role possibility. So taking the best of both the male and the female. And of course, in my whole bus analysis, I think that's what has to happen too, is that we're passengers and we're drivers, so that the role model begins to show that. The women's movement has to be another large issue coming out of the war, coming out of the divorce, coming out of the unhappiness of the 60s, and the unwillingness to look at the establishment and accept it. And so the women's movement has had probably the most dynamic negative and positive effects. Insofar as what usually happens in the new movement, they went to the other extreme, that the female must be absolutely independent and go her own way, understand herself, and oh yeah, if you can learn to understand yourself, mister, that's fine too. But their whole concept was labeled only with the women, never bringing the men along with them at all. And it caused all kinds of difficulties, not to mention the guilt of the women who enjoy being at home. When I look at some of my friends now whose children are in college, I think, why didn't I marry? And they are really free to explore all those kinds of things that they want to do. Now, some of them have been too submissive to have the self-esteem to go look for what it is they really want to do in terms of contributing beyond the home and the mothering. But at least the women's movement brought the possibility. The humanistic concept and the freedom of the male to cry, finally, I think has brought a lot of new understanding to our society and has had a most positive. Certainly the education of women and therefore financial aid for women, the reentry of women, have all had positive effects, I think, in the present. But perhaps one of the most interesting phenomena of today is the realization that the fathers want to father their children. Because what does this do then to the business executive if he really wants to father his children? Is our society built for that? No. And so he is beginning to go in and to change his priorities. The Washington Post has a great article, and I'll put this in the library, from August 1st, in which a gentleman writes, "Dear men, working too late to see your kids most nights, only get to talk to your wife on weekends. Does she have a Cinderella complex? Sick and tired of trying to be the hero, the breadwinner. Guess what? That's not the way Daniel Boone, and that's where I got this, and his wife Rebecca lived, and that's not the way you have to live either." And more men are beginning to look at the fathering possibilities and the mothering to look for a companionship. And so I think that has a definite positive effect, and it's not so much the secondary role. The final, I think, happening of today in clearing out and helping in the movement has been the economy. That women have had to work even as a supplementary to the men's incomes, or at least they thought they had to, because we, of course, are a buying society. Perhaps if we were a much simpler society, this would not, in a sense, be supplementary or necessary either. But the economy has almost demanded that the wife work. And the male has finally said, okay, you may work. The problem is you can't make more money than I do, because that doesn't fit what I've learned all my life as my responsibility. So it takes away my maleness. Rather than increasing the companionship, it gives a kind of complex that we haven't gotten over. That's the struggle we're in right now. Well, if all of this is true, then why aren't more women in the driver's seat? Why aren't more women able to get a dollar for dollar what the male gets and instead get the 59 cents on the dollar? Why? How possibly could the ERA have failed, for example? Why do you think the ERA failed? If all of this new happening is true in our society. 18 men, approximately, decided that the ERA was not for us. We had lots of help from Phyllis, but on the other side, we had a lot of women in the women's movement, a lot of women in the National Political Caucus, But the simple truth is it's male-dominated, and they are threatened by the female. But even more fundamental, the more I read about it and the more I watch what has happened in various states, it really is the anti-labor movement that won in terms of the ERA. Now, why would a labor group such as the clothing industry not want the ERA? Yeah, the low wages. If any of you are familiar with the South, and of course all of the South was able to not pass the ERA, and we almost gave up even trying. And so the biggest failure probably has to do with the money that was poured into the moral majority and into the Phyllis Schlafly groups. Now, the moral majority, I think, is important for you to know about, too. The moral majority had approximately 85 million people. Are they all uneducated people in terms of equality? Are they all fundamentalists that so firmly together believe that women ought to have a secondary role? Are they unchristian? None of those things. The moral majority group, most of them, were used by the labor groups. The labor groups contributed millions of dollars indirectly to the moral majority's funding. Because it's not nice to say we don't want women having equal pay because it interferes with our capital gains, but to say, as an individual, I don't want it because it really does interfere with my religious beliefs. And there are those who believe that, and they are honest, good Christian people. It is not anti-Christian movement in a lot of the moral majority. Now, there are a lot of sects as opposed to religious groups in the moral majority, but they were used by the business world very carefully, and that can be documented, to fight the ERA. And that's one of the backlashes of the future that has to occur. But the third big problem was probably the women's groups themselves. Many of the women's groups, particularly a section of the NOW group, what was their main reason that they talked about the importance of the ERA? Okay, the whole draft issue. The interesting thing is that the whole draft issue has been settled without the ERA. In terms of that they cannot go to combat, Congress says so, they can be inducted if we wish to do that, having nothing to do with the ERA. But that was used by the anti-ERA people. But those that were in favor of the ERA, what were some of the issues that they went ahead and made major issues that you people would certainly disagree with, or some of you would? Two important ones, I think, was the abortion issue, which is not an ERA issue. That's a family issue that you're going to have to solve as individuals, or our government is going to have to solve without the ERA. But some of the women's movement groups used that, the abortion issue, and of course some of the moral majorities used it when the women's movement was not. The second one was the whole gay rights movement. And that was an important negative to the movement. The difficulty of that whole issue is that there are a lot of great, committed lesbian women and gay men who are committed to the ERA. And they were willing to put themselves on the line. The difficulty is that they made that the issue, as opposed to the majority of us and the large majority who are not. And so it became a moral issue, and I don't think that you can deal with the ERA on a moral issue. And the NOW group, the WHEEL group, the National Caucus group will not make that mistake again. The other big mistake on the ERA is that you and all of us did not contribute financially to the ERA. We spend our money on all kinds of things, but that wasn't one of the things we spent our money on the local level. It wasn't until the last ditch effort that women in Illinois put money into it, women in Florida put money into it, and North Carolina. North Carolina, I think, was lost a long time ago. But Florida and Illinois maybe could have. And so financially we haven't helped. We haven't walked the halls of the state legislators, women or men, to say this is what we believe in. Church groups did not. There is not one great Lutheran layman or churchman who said ERA is believed in by this church body. Certainly no Roman Catholic group. Afterwards, in retrospect, they talked about it. But if we really believed in the equality, and I think it is, obviously, from being willing to present it, I think it's an important issue. But we simply didn't see it as an individual endeavor. 65% of us believed in it, according to the polls, but we didn't really contribute our time and energy for it. And that is really why the failure. It has been re-entered into the Congress. It will not pass, of course, immediately, because our legislators, all but 19 of them, are men on the national level. And on the state levels, I don't know what percentage. In Washington, do you know what percentage?
It's higher in Washington than in a lot of states.
I think Minnesota has a lot. Any other state that you know, there are a lot of women in the state legislature. That's really where the action is, by the way, is your state groups and trying to deal with it on a state level. So anyway, that's one of the difficulties and awarenesses that you need of the present. The other important thing for the present, I think, is what is happening in the Reagan administration in pushing women to the back of the bus. And I mentioned this in my tape, but just reiterating them. One is the Women's Educational Equity Act grant, in which they were to cut off all funds. They could not cut off the grant. Congress passed it. But they have three ways of dealing. Get rid of the legislation, and that's not popular. So they're keeping most of the legislation that has to do with handicaps, with blacks, with older people, with welfare, all the social justice issues. Almost all of them, they're not doing it legislatively. The second way, well, how else would you?
Cut off the funds.
That's their best bet. And so they attempted to cut off the funds, for example, of WEA. They have cut the block grants, which I don't think is such a bad idea, that the states are responsible. But then what do they do with this block grant for education after they gave it to you nicely for the state of Washington and for Oregon, for Minnesota? What then happened on those block grants in terms of funds? Any of you in your state legislators enough to know what's happened to them? What can you assume happened if we got to have more money for defense? Cut. 23% of the funds that had gone to your state or the people in your state, not so much directly from your state, were cut. So now you have about 78% or 77% for the state, from the federal government, for the state of Washington and Oregon to conduct its education and its business. Then the increase in standard of living and in the indexes are about 14% inflation. So you've already lost 30% in the block grants that have gone to your states. And that will be the affirmative action, the welfare people, or the kinds of re-educating older people. Again, all of that hitting women, number one as the candidate. The other large area attacked is financial aid for your children. And the loans and the funding has been cut. And again, females still make 59 cents on the dollar in the summer, too. And so our college women are the ones that are having to stay home because they couldn't make enough money in the summer. And an awful lot of our young men, too, by the way. And that's the financial aid cuts that have occurred. The third way, by the way, that they have, after they cut off the funds, that they can't change the legislation, the third way, how else could you do it if there are some funds there? If you don't want it to happen, you don't want any affirmative action, who might you hire? If I want a Women's Equity Act grant, who might Reagan hire to be sure I don't get it?
Someone who doesn't support.
Yeah, a non-supporter. And so what they have done is to fire huge numbers of men and women who are interested in the civil rights, who are interested in welfare, who are interested in women. And in fact, in the WEA grant, which I know the most about, they put on 90-day leave the woman that was in charge of it and put instead a moral majority woman who had belonged to the Eagle Forum, which is the most conservative of the conservative, in charge of it. And so none of the proposals were approved, and they rushed in at the last minute new proposals. They also had readers who were all from the new white right wing when it had to do with an affirmative action. Now, I don't think WEA is the most important government agency in the world at all. It's the principle of what happened in the little group that I know of. The hiring and the firing is larger than it has ever been in our history. There's always hiring and firing in new governmental happenings, but this was a wholesale. Then in terms of the women, for example, they have what they called a President's Advisory Committee for Women, which was made up mostly of women in education. All of them were replaced, and I went to the inaugural address of the new leader to be sure it had in fact happened. And there were 23 new women selected, all married or divorced. They had misses, at least, beside their name. And the president was made, the woman who was made president was a member of the Eagle Forum from Peoria, Illinois, whose greatest responsibility thus far had been a school board member, as opposed to having worked on the state or the national level anywhere. And what that does then, of course, is they cannot not have an advisory committee because Congress has said so. But what it does is then cut off the effectiveness of it. And though that's really what has happened in the process. They are fighting health and care, old age. All of those, remember, in terms of women, they live 9 years longer. And so again, it's the women that are affected. The re-entry women, women now see all kinds of possibilities that we mentioned before, and those are being stymied because there are no funds being put into re-entry of women into the workaday world. Child care, so that women can have their children near at hand, or the father can, have been cut by the administration. And so basically what we're dealing with in looking at the Reagan administration is all kinds of negative happenings within the society that we're living in, and moving back towards the importance of the breadwinner being the male. And so that's sort of what the present has happened. What do you project as possibilities or solutions for all of this in the future, if in fact you see a greater need for the new companion emphasis in the union of a family, or even in those 38% of individuals who are running families? Remember, in terms of singles, that larger numbers are getting divorced than are married. And without dealing with the complex issues that are involved in it, what do you see as some of the solutions that you and I can deal with when you walk out of here, even? One of the things is we have to have more men that have a sensitivity to the breadwinning concept, understand how they were raised, understand how they have changed, and move that concept into the kinds of actions, the political happenings of the females. If there's any negative of the women's movement, is that they've barely invited men into their sacred halls. And the population is still made up of 50-50. And women cannot possibly understand the pressures that men have had. I work with a lot of young men, graduate students, and junior and senior and college men. They have the added problem of they've had to be macho because they're in physical education. And they're really hurting for the lack of understanding of a lot of the young women that are about them. And if we really are going to have a companion happening, we've got to bring and help men to understand, but we also have to understand the pressures that men have had. After all, they died 9 years sooner, not by chance. They've got heart ailments, not by chance. They've got pressures internally, not by chance. We've helped build that. Sometimes when women look at the world, and sometimes I do this myself, I think that, oh, the men's had it easy. He's done what he's wanted all along. But what this article in the Washington Post says is, hey, he hasn't wanted to do that. He hasn't wanted to do that at all. He'd like to see his family. He'd like to see his wife on occasion. He'd like to help raise the children. And one of the ways we can deal with that is in all of these grants, too. What I would like to see in some of these grants is a grant only dealing with men, and men working out what in the world's happening to their wives in terms of action. And by bringing them into the affirmative action, that's where we have help. What we're finding in the athletic world It's the men who have had the most problem in Division I, which is the upper athletic group. When we get men there who say, hey, let's use a new model of athletics, the model is no good. And it is happening, for example, on the small college level in NAIA, which happens to be for you the National Intercollegiate Athletic Group for Men. And those men and those women have gotten together, and they're going to have a good program. And that's from the men who say, look, we didn't go into that high-pressurized Division I, even if I'm a good coach. And you women ought not to be doing it. And so I think that that is one of the most important solutions. And also that men and women talk together for what they're feeling now. And that we don't burden the men with what happened in the past as their fault. Actually, in sport, for example, it's the women in 1920 who prevented women from being in varsity sport. And in 1922, 1924, 28, 32, and 36, the women in physical education forcefully tried to prevent women from being in the Olympics. And so the whole time I was blaming the men, it really was the women. No, it's certainly the culture, but it was women that were worried about the view, that was worried about the physiological happenings, all the things that may not be true, but they're the ones who pushed it. And I have letters that demonstrate the concern that the women had not to go into the male model. And yet, in athletics, we failed. There's no question we're moving to the male model of competitive athletics. And part of it is because we didn't bring the men in time to help us figure out how do we fight the whole thing. What else? Okay, the whole area of buying, the whole area of when men and women have moved into business together, are they going to make it the same game of business? Are we just going to make bigger and better things, even as the women are in administration? But also how we spend our dollars in our churches, how we spend our dollars in society, as we look at who was anti in the whole ERA and making it difficult for them. A lot of people think that the Nestle, in terms of milk, is not working, but it is working in part. And when all of the women in, what city was it, decided not to buy meat on the rising cost of meat, anytime you can deal in the economy, the power is in money. And so if you can figure out the money.
The ladies, I don't know if it's, I know some realize it, but they control the financial button in the American stock market. If the 9-year differential is for no other reason, they inherit the stock, or they actually invest and make money on it, where some of us males have tried on a small scale. We're not making the money, but they control the financial bucks and the proxies in the stock market, but they're not united and they don't vote.
And what they actually, in fact, have done, what have all those rich widows done? They hired the male attorneys to make the decisions. And so if women would become more familiar with the financial happening in the family, and that's just between a husband and wife for working that out, to know what's happening to the money, where it's going, and what's happening. But women who have become interested and worked on it, they take better risks. You almost believe there is something about a woman's intuition when you deal in the financial market. They're really doing good jobs, and they're also, those that are doing it themselves, are not putting money in which indirectly it's going to defense if they don't believe in it. And they're really being more careful with their money, with the whole taxation system. And that's where so many of our millionaires have had control, is that they don't pay taxes. And the women that have inherited it have automatically paid taxes unless they hired the male. So only indirectly do we have control of the money. It's late for controlling the money. When you're raising your kids and needing some of it, we're not controlling it all. And I think that's one of the things that the women can do. And a lot of women who have decided to stay at home could be doing so much more on understanding what is happening in the world and contributing. We've got a lot, really, of women who can be women of leisure and need not work, but can work in the sense of where is the dollar in this family going? Where is the dollar in your family going? And in the whole attitude and development.
If women would sit in families.
Either that, but they may want to be working out of the home for the same reason some of the men stay at work until 9 o'clock at night. In terms of... But that's also true of men. In terms of how we spend our money, for example, we have at Sears Roebuck Company, where my have a cousin who's deals in personnel, 45 to 50% of the employees are second job individuals, which means that the men in our society, or the women, and probably more the men, because the women have had to go home after work and do another job there. But the men in our society have gotten second jobs rather than either the fathering concept or permitting the woman to do work if she really wants to in order to be, again, that breadwinner. And that we need to examine family kinds of lives in terms of second jobs on why men take separate second jobs. And if that's true of Sears, it's got to be true of an awful lot of other places. And of course, some of that is our standard of living and our feeling of what is essential. The woman has two jobs anyway, unless you really have worked out a good companionship relationship in which the fathering and the household tasks are divided according to how much each one works. Oh, that's why Sears does it. But it's the man who lets him do it. That's also why they like women to have three-fourths jobs and hire several. Now, unfortunately, there's some people like the university that ought to think about that more. We have a whole bunch of women in College Park, Maryland, who have great minds, have specializations, have master's degrees, and they won't let them have the husband have part-time, three-fourths time, and she have three-fourths time. And they do let husbands and wives in the university. They don't let two women, school teachers, who have decided we'd like to teach half-time and to have one in the morning and one in the afternoon. It blows the minds of education. And that's where it ought to be happening. At least some of the institutions have moved to flexible time schedules, which permits both men and women to work. I have a friend that's in affirmative action, a male, and he takes care of all of the problems at school. And he has a terrible time with one of the teachers who calls the mother. Evidently, they have some kind of bright, exciting girl, but she also is a problem, therefore. And it's always, bring your mother to school. Well, my daddy comes. Well, is your mommy at home? Yep, but my daddy comes. And it blows the mind of them that he really is responsible for the education of the girl. The mother works part-time, and she's really afraid of the teacher. And so it makes a very good kind of combination for him to do that. But he has a terrible time saying, I am mothering, if you want to call it, my children, and my wife is painting the dining room. And that's what my wife likes to do.
Talk about what we can do and talk about the church. And while it's a nurturing field, one of the very pleasant shocks in our congregation, I think to me, was last year we called Susan Briel and Martin Wells, their pastors. This is a husband and wife team. We met them here at home last year. I think something like PLT at Pacific Lutheran Seminary in Berkeley has about 50 growing. That's all great and dandy, but what's the next step? Are we as a congregation willing to give them a call and pay them a salary to put them to work in the congregation? And they talk a lot about his working part-time to be more of a fatherly role, and her working in pulp and so forth, and his whole role model aspect, and she gets a separate salary. We divide the salary, so she gets a separate paycheck in her name.
Both get retirement, they both participate as they see fit based on their household needs. She is now expecting a child. The role is going to change some during the pregnancy and delivery period, then it'll reverse back depending on how they want to schedule. It's really a neat experience.
And I think that women are different than men. And getting both, you're really getting the best of both worlds in a pastor. I just really think that we've been educated differently, and right now the women pastors are different than the man pastors in our society, and that both of them fit, and for some will like one and some the other. Another husband and wife combination is in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in which they couldn't quite afford two pastors, and so they hired a one and a half of three-fourths and three-fourths, and he is doing some of the mothering. But the church brings up the point of, remember, they're 99% male-dominated, and that we have approximately 100 women in ALC who are attempting to get calls, and that Carol Nolte, an excellent teacher, had a master's degree, finished, and it took 9 months to get a call for anything except an assistant pastor. And she says, I'm too old to be an assistant pastor. I'll never get to be a pastor. And it took 9 months for that. Nancy Winner, it took many months. And these are fine women. They're not anything unusual about them. They have good minds. They have good humor. And it took that long. And that's one of the things that the church ought to think about. Even if she sings soprano, it really doesn't say any place that the Lord doesn't like sopranos singing for the church service. And so that's certainly in the church you need to be thinking about it. And we don't need all males on the console just to get the males in the church. And everybody begins to worry about that, but it's nice to have power somewhere in the happening. Quickly, any other suggestions for the happening? For governmental things, the only way legislation is going to have a sensitivity to it is if we get into our state, local, and national scene, sensitive men who are of the fathering, mothering kind of natures, who are sensitive to equality for all people, and that we contribute our funds and find out what the candidate is thinking. In addition, being willing to risk a woman in the legislature. We simply don't have enough on any of the levels, and we've got to train them, and you train them starting on the local, the state, and the national level. And unless we're willing to do that on the state and the local level, we're not going to give governmental influence. Of course, I'm also for all our church people, males and females, to get themselves into the political scene. That's where you can make a change. And the more I'm in Washington, D.C., the more I'm convinced of that. But that's where one has to be willing to put time and energy. And the new National Women's Political Caucus, the WEAL, which is the Women's Equity League, is interested only in legislature and legislation. And you can write to them and find out who are the men that have historically within Congress made decisions which are for the human being.
Joanne, for the state of Washington, there's a group called Washington Women United that is focusing on issues of equality, issues that concern women. It's a nice thing about joining the group is you don't have to go to any meetings. But they support a lobbyist in Olympia to monitor these issues, and you get a monthly newsletter doing just what you said. They'll tell you just how legislators are voting, so you can really have a sense of where they're standing on different issues. And if you want any information on it, I'll give it to you.
The Women's Leagues for both the Democrats and the Republicans also have that. A lot more money is being put into the political scene by women and for women and for men who have a feminist viewpoint or an equity, which is all it really is. So I think finally that the responsibility really lies with each one of us within the family structure with the husband and wife, dealing with the breadwinner concept, because that seems to be one of the basic issues that then decides whether the woman is going to be free to be the bus driver or whether he can feel free to be in the back of the bus or a passenger or a driver, and that this mutual companionship for males and females can only happen as we do it individually within the church and then within the nation, and that our hope for justice and equality doesn't really lie in the laws and the government and the constitutional amendments, although they are helpful, but it really rests with each of us in our local communities moving out into the society. And so I would ask that all of us have at least an ERA attitude, which is nothing more than a human being first, then whether we're male or female, then what our occupation is, and then all the rest of our priorities.